Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Star Wars Universe Podcast. Today we are continuing our coverage of Star Wars Rebels as we dive into Season 3, Episodes 1 and 2, along with a little bit of a wrap-up of Season 2, which we really ended on a bang with Twilight of the Apprentice. All that and more with myself, Riki, and Sarah Hayashi after this commercial break we have no control over.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. I'm Matthew, your host. I'm joined, as I said, by Riki and Sarah Hayashi. Folks, we've wrapped up Season 2. We're on to the next season. How are we feeling? It's good. We haven't had a chance to kind of talk Rebels in a little while, so it's good to be back.
Yeah. Everybody's got new haircuts. It's great.
How do you follow up the best season finale ever? Well, how about the best season opener ever?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Let's start by just kind of doing a general wrap-up of Season 2. We talked about Twilight of the Apprentice, the way it ends, and why we all love that. What are kind of your overall thoughts on the season, though? Because I feel like it much more so than Clone Wars, where we talked about things being really out of order, it feels to me like each of the individual seasons of Rebels kind of has a story. What do y'all think of Season 2 overall?
Well, we got a lot of the Jedi stuff, right? With Kanan and Ezra and a little bit of Ahsoka, and them advancing their mentorship relationship, and then going to the Jedi Temple and learning some stuff, and then going to the Sith Temple and learning some stuff. But I felt like we got a little bit less of some of the other characters. We got a great Zeb story with Agent
Kallus.
Thank you. But we didn't get much from Sabine.
Yeah.
And that was a little disappointing.
We got a little bit of her on with is it Pre Vizsla? No. One of the blonde fellows of Mandalore.
Yeah, they had to make a peace deal with the people of Mandalore, so there was some good stuff with Sabine in like one or two episodes, also some stuff with her and Hera. But yeah, I think she was a little bit in the background this season. And I think I'm looking forward to, if I remember, she kind of comes back into her own some in this third season. So looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah, not enough Chopper.
I mean, there's never enough Chopper.
But no, I agree. It was definitely very Jedi forward mm-hmm. this season. But
yeah,
I don't think to the detriment of the show by any means.
It definitely felt to me like also this was the season where, you know, season one was about kind of establishing what's the world like at this time. Season two, it felt like now I feel like we're kind of now on the on ramp towards the original movies. You know, the Empire's control is tightening and you're starting to see, you know, different power grids within the Empire emerging and conflicting with each other. These little bands of rebel groups are starting to form together into the Alliance, and we're starting to wrestle with, like, are we individual groups or are we the Alliance? We kind of got, not resolution necessarily, but like the Inquisitor plot kind of had to be kicked into a higher gear. It really feels like there's a lot of things that we're building over the course of that season.
Yeah, Phoenix Squadron has an official base now, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like you said, Matthew, we got the beginnings of the rebellion coming together. We saw Ahsoka's relationship with Bail, and then we saw Princess Leia show up as a character in season two.
Really great.
So very much those hints of like what happened since the Empire formed, what have these people been doing, and now ramping up towards that New Hope showdown.
Definitely. So let's kind of put the pin now in season two, and I want to turn to season three, but I do want to say a quick word first, because I told you about commercials we had no control over. This is a quick commercial that I do have some control over. I love making these podcasts for you all. It does take some money. It does take a lot of time and, you know, paying for all the different facilities and stuff like that. And so we're looking for new ways to help fund it, and I was approached by the good folks at Manscaped and asked to do some paid sponsorship for them, which I was happy to do. They shipped me some of their product. I wanted to give it a try, of course, before I could tell you if it was a good product or not. In part because I'm going to admit the name is not something I'm in love with. I myself am not a man and yet have the biological properties that the Manscaped technology is meant to help with. Would love to see the, you know, little bit of broadening of the name there. But it is a product that I'm pretty happy to stand behind because what they do is pretty amazing. I have not been a person who engaged in the manscaping art quite often. The few times I attempted to buy products, they were not the happiest on my skin. This one's completely different. So support for this podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in below-the-waist grooming for those with outies below the waist instead of innies. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They recently launched the ultimate hygiene product, the Performance Package. It's like a $250 package in terms of all the different things it has. You can get it for a much lower price on their website, manscaped.com. And most importantly, if you use the discount code of SWUP, our initials, Star Wars Universe Podcast, SWUP, you'll get an additional 20% off. Check out their website. They've got a lot of great products. Talk to you about them a little bit more over the next couple of weeks. But there's a lot, you know, both the kind of actual trimmers to there's a nose and ear hair trimmer that I've not yet used, but Paul says he's actually breathing better now that he used it on his nose hairs. They're supporting the podcast, and the boxer shorts they make offer the best support of myself that I've ever had, which I'm quite happy with. So yeah, definitely check out the products. I don't know what to ask you to participate in the conversation. If you got any thoughts on this topic, go right ahead.
You got our interest when you said nose hair trimmer, because I'm not interested in the below half stuff. But when you said nose hair trimmer, we both perked up at the same time because I unfortunately have a lot of nose hair. And don't take care of it enough. See, Sarah is nodding and shaking her head and all the things in agreement.
I've gone after his nose hair with tweezers, which he didn't love. So nose hair trimmer seems right up our alley.
So now I may have to take a look at that product and come back to you with a recommendation.
You definitely should. You get 20% off by using the code, and would love to get to hear your thoughts on it. I know Paul has very sensitive skin. I talked about some of my own previous attempts to trim the hedges. The products, I have to say, they really commit to the bit. Everything is, it's the lawnmower, it's the hedge trimmer, it's the crop duster, is the deodorant made specifically for that part of your body. Never thought this would be a thing I would use, but actually works really well. Check out the ear and nose product. It's a great product. And for everybody listening, if you're interested, check out the website, manscaped.com. If you find anything there that catches your fancy, SWUP is the discount code. So with that, let's return ourselves to a universe that makes a lot more sense than one in which we're hawking grooming products and talking about Star Wars Universe, specifically Rebels Season 3. Because we get one heck of a doozy of an episode. Riki, you said we just had the best season finale, and you think this is one of the best season openers?
Well, now that we're talking about what's actually in the show, in mm-hmm. the past, we geeked out about this character. This is the Star Wars introduction, canon introduction of Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Thrawn is here, and Thrawn is sticking around.
Yeah, he was mentioned in the, not Ahsoka show, but in The Mandalorian when Ahsoka showed up. She right. was looking for Grand Admiral Thrawn. And if you were wondering all about that, this is where we start to get the pieces of that puzzle, how Thrawn and Ahsoka will relate to each other.
Yeah. Thrawn is a character who's appeared originally in books. First, he was in the Legends canon, and then now more recently, he's been in the actual canon novels. Myself and Rob McKenzie have now recorded a couple of episodes about that as part of the Star Wars Book Club, which you'll find on our podcast. But yeah, getting Thrawn into this episode. Let's talk about how we felt, but let's first just do kind of a quick summary of the episode. So, do you want to read the episode summary? And this is a two-part arc, so we're just discussing it as one story.
6 months after the events of the previous season, Ezra leads a mission to rescue Hondo Onaka from the Imperial prison, wielding a new lightsaber and displaying force skills that he's learned from the Sith holocron in the process. Hondo's intel regards a squadron of Y-wings due to be destroyed in an Imperial shipyard that the rebels set out to appropriate, with Ezra being given command of the mission. Kanan, meanwhile, is struggling with his blindness when he discovers Ezra's use of the holocron and confiscates it, before being summoned out into the Adelon Wilds by a mysterious call that proves to be from the Bendu, an ancient force user who is neither Jedi nor Sith. Meanwhile, Governor Price decides that the growing rebellion threat requires greater response and requisitions the 7th Fleet, which is revealed to be under the leadership of recently promoted Grand Admiral Thrawn. The Bendu helps Kanan to realize that the Force grants him abilities that can make up for his lost sight, and on sensing Ezra's peril on the mission, Kanan leaves to go help him, leaving the holocron with the Bendu. The rebels manage to secure a handful of fighters, but lose the Phantom after Ezra sets the shipyard plummeting. And it is only the timely arrival of the Ghost and the other rebel ships that saves them after Thrawn determines that they are not dealing with an entire rebel fleet and orders his forces to allow their escape. Ezra is suspended, but expresses his gratitude to Kanan for rejoining the action, while the rebels learn that the Y-Wings are to be delivered to General Dondana's unit.
Yeah. So there's a whole lot that goes into this episode. It's funny because when you started talking about Thrawn, I was like, yeah, that's one of the great parts of this. But honestly, there's like so many great plot lines that are really starting to develop. But let's start with our big boy in blue, the non-big blue Boy Scout. How'd you feel about seeing Thrawn on screen for the first time ever?
Well, this is our second watch of the show. So right. Obviously we knew it was coming. But the first time I was very excited. And I think Sarah didn't really know who he was.
No idea.
I was like, who is this guy? And I was like, I chatterboxed about all of the books. Because Grand Admiral Thrawn is probably the best, you know, extended universe, as we now call it, Legends character
yeah.
of all time. Mara Jade is, to me, a close second. But Thrawn was just, as a Star Wars fan, when I read the novels for the first time, I was really excited.
Yeah, he is one of my absolute favorite characters, and it's interesting, this is something we're going to do more in the episode we did about the books, where if the Thrawn of the shows and the Thrawn of the books don't exactly line up, especially in the newest book, Timothy Zahn, the person who writes him, some of the newer books feel kind of like the dungeon master who's fallen in love with his own NPC and now wants to tell you a story about the NPC, because just... Thrawn has kind of gone from being a villain to an anti-hero to, like, really nothing he ever does is wrong. And so having him reintroduced in this, where one of the first things we learn about him is that he just won this battle where Agent Kallus said, if I understand, the civilian deaths outnumbered the number of insurgents you killed. And Thrawn's like, well, you know, rebel's gonna rebel, empire's gonna empire. It was like, oh yeah, okay, no, this is the villain Thrawn we're getting, but such a compelling character.
And I think the fact that he's played by Lars Mikkelsen helps with that as well, because, like, I don't know, depending on your fandoms, you might remember him as he was like a villain in season 4 of Sherlock. That's how I mm-hmm. knew him best, and I think he's got that, like, cold, calculating,
yep.
you know, battiness. Yeah.
He was also on the television show House of Cards, playing yep. not Putin. I believe the character's name was Petrov. Yes. And he was the Russian president. And it was like, very much not Putin.
Yeah, and he comes from quite an acting family. If you recognize the last name Mikkelsen, it's because there's a number of people in his family who've been fantastic actors. And yeah, it's funny because he's European. He's not Southern, but he speaks in a manner of speaking that I can best describe as a drawl. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of like, there is never, he is going to be very particular with his words. He's never in a rush. And it just, it's such a different kind of villain, especially after a Vader or someone like that, where it's all anger and rage. This person is, you know, if you think about the Robert Frost poem, Darth Vader will destroy the world in fire. Thrawn is 100% going to destroy the world in ice. It is cool. It is confident. He speaks like the person who just has no reason to doubt himself. And it makes him even more scary in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially at the end when he and Price are talking and she says like, oh, they brought their whole fleet. It's like, that's not their whole fleet. I knew this the whole time. I have just gained this little piece of information. Let my prey go and we'll come back for the bigger prize. Yeah. He's very like cold, calculating, like an evil Sherlock Holmes kind of.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to put it. Or Dr. Moriarty, in many ways.
Yeah, sure. Who I guess is just evil Sherlock Holmes. There was already one. Yeah.
And Matthew, you mentioned the Mikkelsen family. His brother, Mads Mikkelsen, was the actor who portrayed Galen Erso in Rogue One. So fantastic Star Wars connection there, even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's right now, clear, it's not 100%, but it seems very clear we're going to get Thrawn in live action. And we've had previous discussions about voice actors becoming live action actors and how generally that's something that we should be doing, but that sometimes it doesn't work for sometimes because the studio just doesn't want to, which is not great. But sometimes because, you know, voice actors are like, I don't want to be on camera. I'm happy. You know, I just want to do with voice acting, or they're just not as good on camera. This is an actor who has quite a lot of on-screen experience. So it's not known by any means. Maybe he's busy. Maybe he's moved on with his career. But I think there's a chance we're going to get him as the live-action Thrawn, which would just be phenomenal.
And he looks the part, too. Like, the Thrawn that has been portrayed in comic books and now in this show, obviously, you know, you have to somehow make him blue and give him bright red eyes. But his facial features and all of that, I think, are a very good match for the Thrawn that we have come to know.
Yeah. And I like it a lot, especially because I do kind of feel like, you know, we were talking about how the last season was mostly Jedi. It was also, most of our antagonists were Force users. You know, it was the Inquisitors. It was Vader at the very end. And I don't really know how you could top that without it just being a lot more Vader. And given everything of where Vader has to go in a couple years, I don't think you can have Vader on screen that often. So honestly, being like, okay, that's great. We had a lot of Force users. Now we're going to switch over to this other faction within the Empire of Tarkin and Thrawn and these like military political types. I really like that. I like that as a new direction of the show.
Totally. Because ultimately, like, this is what the rebels are rebelling against. It's not really Vader, right? It is the Empire.
Yeah, most of them have no idea about Vader, let alone about the Force, or because, you know, as Star Wars has told us, it is now an ancient religion that no one remembers from 18 years ago.
Well, I think I'm assuming there's been like a disinformation campaign, right? To get the whole, Jedi? No, that was some wacky people who said they had magic powers. Not a real thing. If you talk about it, we will murder you.
That part, the kind of like, it's sort of like, you know, a thought police kind of situation, you know, where like no one remembers because no one will ever admit to remembering. Mm-hmm. Could make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and in some sense, I think the Empire is a victim of its own disinformation when they come up against Jedi who have survived, because I think they continually underestimate the opponents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But here is a character who is never going to underestimate anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he is prepared. He's knowledgeable. And it's, yeah, it already just sets the tone for a great season. It's funny, though, because I knew Thrawn was coming back. I totally forgot that he comes back in these episodes, because to me, my defining memory is we get Ezra flirting with the dark side, and it's not portrayed in the stark black and white good and evil terms that it normally is. I've been on record here saying, I think we've all talked about this to some extent, that I really like when we get past the idea of just light side good, dark side bad, and start playing with, like, you know, what's the middle ground? What's the... And so, first of all, we get a character a literal, very powerful Force user who's neither light side or dark, is somewhere in the middle in the Bendu. But also having, like, it's not a Ezra is going wild and he's becoming Darth Ezra and he's killing everyone. He's just, he's a little more aggressive. He's a little more hubristic. And when it comes time to fight, he's able to draw on some powers that are, like, this is what I think is so brilliant, because it's not a clear, oh my God, he used overwhelming force. He did something horrible and torturous that he shouldn't have done. What he does is he mind controls an enemy soldier and gets that soldier to use his, you know, robot machine, the walker, to shoot the other enemies. And then basically makes that soldier commit suicide by pushing, making him take the walker over the cliff. It's clearly pretty dark. It's clearly the kind of thing that a Jedi is not supposed to do. The way the scene is shot, I don't think our heroes live if he doesn't do it. And so I'm going to curious, what was your take on it? Because I was watching it going like, A, I'm not positive this is dark side, but I think it is, which is what I liked. But also it felt very morally gray in a way that I really like. It wasn't just like, you're dark side, you're evil now forever.
Oh, I thought it was real dark.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, this is an extension of the Force power of suggestion, right? These aren't the droids you're looking for. But he takes control, you said, he takes control of the pilot. And literally, like, as he does the hand motions, those are the motions that the pilot does to shoot the blasters. As Ezra walks forward, that's the motion, you know, that the mm-hmm. walker takes to walk forward off of the platform. So it is far beyond, like, the power of suggestion. And it is, like, very much just mind control, like, suppressing that person's mm-hmm. free will. So I thought it was completely dark side, and there was no gray to it at all.
Yeah, like, if this were Anakin, I think we'd have, like, the little dun-dun-dun, mm-hmm. dun-dun-dun in the background of this scene. And also, like, Ezra's just kind of being a jerk in the episode, like,
being
as well,
a teenager.
Which isn't helping. Yeah, like, a teenager on a power trip, right? Because he's just got promoted. Kanan, it seems, has stopped going on missions, so Ezra is, like, the de facto boss now. Like, Zeb mm-hmm. even calls him boss, and Sabine's like, he's gonna go to his head, don't do that.
Which it 100% does. You're completely right on that.
Yeah, like, instantaneously, right? And he's, like, even making these maybe outlandish orders, right? Like, to go and... They're just supposed to go to this garbage station, basically, and just do mm-hmm. some recon. But when Ezra sees that the Y-Wings are, like, being actively destroyed, he's like, no, we're gonna go and we're gonna get them right now. Rex warns him this isn't the mission, but he's like, we're doing it. We're doing mm-hmm. it my way. I'm the boss now. When they go, they get Hondo, who I love and we need to talk about more, and it's sad that we haven't talked about him enough yet. And he's also got, like, a little, I think, Ugnaught? Is that how you pronounce them?
Ugnaught,
the little, like, pigman friend named Turba.
Uh-huh.
And I think what you were alluding to earlier, Matthew, with, like, Ezra needs to mind control this walker, is, like, Turba ran out front and, like, was killed.
Right.
By the Empire in that moment. So I think, like, it's not some, like, hypothetical threat, right? Like, this is a very real threat. But still, yeah, like, mind controlling someone to, like, commit suicide seems a little a lot dark.
Until that last line, Professor X would say this is completely the act of a hero. I fundamentally disagree with Professor X, but sure. Yeah, like, I guess to me, here's the thing, because I do agree with you. I think it's very dark. I just don't, you know, the way that the dark side was taught to us in, you know, the original movies, you know, once you start down that dark path, forever shall it dominate your destiny. Mm. And this idea of, like, hate leads to suffering and just becoming, like, a Darth Vader. For me, I look at that scene and I think, yes, it's dark. I also think, like, it's not like the goal was to sneak by these soldiers and let them live. There's no way the story ends with those soldiers living if our heroes escape. I mean, maybe, possibly, but, like, they're going to try and kill him either way. I'm not saying I think, like, you know, the mind control is fine. I'm just sort of, to me, it raises the question of, like, if you're in a battle to the death, does it make sense to have this idea of, like, it's okay to shoot these people, it's okay to use this kind of power to kill them and save your own lives, But it's not, but doing this other thing is completely not okay. I don't love mind control by any means. I'm not saying it's good. I guess that's where I find the grayness of it, because it is in the midst of this battle. And frankly, the way it was set up, at least I think we're supposed to believe that if he didn't do that, they would be in real trouble. Like, it was definitely a push to the extreme, maybe this was what you had to do kind of thing.
Sure. I mean, like, someone in their party has already died, right? So, right. Like, they're in pretty dire straits. And I mean, like, it's because of Ezra's doing, because Ezra's, like, insistent on them going and getting these Y-Wings when they were just supposed to be doing recon. So I think Ezra's also in this trying to get out of this, like, trying to dig himself out, basically, but right. He's only digging himself in deeper. I think this is kind of, like, maybe why the Jedi are so, like, anti-feelings in the first place, right? Because, like, Ezra is using the Sith holocron. He's able to open it, which is... we're supposed to believe is a spooky bad sign. But, I mean, like, it's just knowledge, like he points out. And he's trying to use it to protect his friends. And I think that's where the don't have friends kind of thing is coming from, right? Because, like, Ezra is using this power that's available. He's using all the knowledge that he can. I don't know. At the end of last episode, and even a little bit in this one, when, like, the Ventress holocron is talking to Ezra... this talk of, like, it reminds me kind of the whole, like, forbidden fruit thing from, like, Judeo-Christian tradition. Knowledge is inherently evil. And, like, that seems like someone who's trying to, someone that wants to oppress you would say, right? Like, it's a little weird.
Which I just wanted to say a quick thing there of the knowledge is evil interpretation is 100% a Christian thing. It is in no way a Jewish interpretation of that story.
Just that sounds right.
Quick aside there.
That makes sense. Thanks for the correction. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think, Matthew, what you said earlier about the dark side, and once you start down the path, forever will it dominate your destiny. That's just Jedi propaganda, right? Because 100%. In the Skywalker saga itself, we see Anakin become Darth Vader, get dominated by the dark side, and then return to the light side. Right. So it is not an absolute, right? As Obi-Wan would accuse them of.
Which is itself an absolute, as Obi-Wan says. But yeah, go on.
Well, yeah, and I think, like, also having the Bendu in this episode, it helps highlight the grayness that I think you're alluding to as well.
Yeah.
Like, I agree that I don't think Ezra is becoming a Sith in any way, shape, or form, right? Like, he's maybe going on a bit of a power trip because he's just got this weird promotion. He's maybe not, he maybe needs somebody like Kanan to come back and show him how to use this new power instead of just being, like, knowledge wrong and bad, let me confiscate this. Right. And I think that's what the Bendu's there for. Go ahead.
But we continue to see the escalation, I feel, of Ezra's dark sideness, because when they return from rescuing Hondo and then go on the next mission, they have to make a jump to a point that is controlled by the mining guild. They take out two TIE fighters. And then Ezra's like, no, we also have to blow up that freighter so that they don't alert the Empire.
Leave no witnesses.
Right. And to me...
That's pretty dark.
That was really dark. And the other people on the mission are like, no, we don't have to do that. We can just leave now.
Mm-hmm. For me, what he does with the Walker is sort of a, like... That, to me, is a war is hell moment. To me, the idea of being... And this is kind of the same... some of the same discussions we were having, myself and Riki and Paul... for an episode on the Superhero Ethics podcast, when we were talking about Kenshin, I often struggle with the idea that there's an ethical way to fight a war. You know, to me, the whole idea of wars is unethical. Him being like, look, we have to do this dark thing, but we have to win, makes sense. It's the thing with the freighter, but then especially at the very end of these episodes, when they're on this kind of floating space platform and he's trapped with the Imperial commander, who was like, who used to be one of the admirals from season one, who's now been demoted to this junkyard. And I think the implication is supposed to be there's still a bunch of Imperials on the station. And Ezra's response is like, look, I'm just going to crash the station. And when the Imperial says, but wait, we're all going to die, he says, no, I'll be fine. You all, I don't care about. Like, that's what I was like, okay, this is like some murder happening here by Mr. Ezra. This is pretty intense.
Very much a continued escalation of his darkness. And it's not always the same, right? Like the mind control, the leave no witnesses, and then the I don't care about you. Like, they're kind of different manifestations of darkness and evil. But we see that, and overall in this episode arc, it's because Kanan's not there, right?
Yeah.
Because his mentor is not there, literally is blind and cannot see. We get an amazing scene where Kanan does confront him and kind of stumbles across the Sith holocron, right? By accident, really. And is like, oh, you've been using this thing? Like, no, that's no good.
Yeah, but just him being like completely unaware of it as well. Yeah,
yeah, up till that point was unaware that Ezra was using the dark side.
Yeah.
And as the summary stated, like, this has been going on for 6 months, because old school TV, you know, was like, over the summer, nothing happens. Like, the TV show is off the air. So mm-hmm. when we get the new season, it skips forward like this.
Everybody's got haircuts. That's how we know that time has passed. So yeah, Brown Titus, we encountered with the Interdictor in season one.
Season two.
Oh, man. Yeah. So good.
Titus is that Imperial officer who I didn't remember the name of.
I had to look it up. Full disclosure. Yeah. So he's been demoted to the junkyard. Ezra comes in and he's like, you're here. This is how I'm going to get my promotion. Ezra's basically like, no, get ready for another demotion. But then I think there is a moment where he says it's time to evacuate. Like, Ezra tells Titus to evacuate his people. So I don't think he's like whole hog, I'm going to murder all of you. I do think he doesn't care if they get off or not, but he does give them warning. I'm blowing up the station. You do you, boo, right?
Right. That's fair. But yeah, it's definitely not a... Like, in the past, there would be, okay, even though you're my enemy, let's get you onto the ship as well, you know? And there's none of that here.
No, definitely not.
And I don't think we see, any of those Imperial escape ships getting away.
Yeah. We don't spend, a lot of time looking at them, though. I mean, that's fair. I'm willing to believe that they're off somewhere, that Titus has been demoted even further.
Uh-huh. That's certainly possible. That's possible.
Yeah.
I think I also just love it, especially given the kind of stuff you were talking about the Kanan dynamic. Because if you think about it, this is such a great way of continuing what happened in the last episodes, the end of season two, where Ezra was placed in this position where Darth Maul was basically saying, Kanan can't be your mentor. I can teach you things he can't. And then Darth Maul defeats Kanan in combat for the most part, you know, and then Kanan kind of gets back at him somewhat. But Kanan is still blind because of somewhat, at least in that moment, losing the fight or losing that part of the fight to Darth Maul. And so, yeah, I get that, there's this real brokenness right now in the relationship between Ezra and Kanan, both of Kanan not trusting himself, because that was always his concern, and Ezra not sure if he can trust Kanan, plus Kanan's kind of abandoned him. It's just, there's just so much nuance and depth in that relationship that I really love.
Mm-hmm.
And the payoff at the end of this episode is so good. In the way that they create that plot tension. So at the end of the episode, the station is falling into the atmosphere and Ezra is on it and has lost his means of escape. And then the Phantom shows up with Hera piloting, and then Kanan says, I'll go get him, and does the Lando Calrissian, thing at the end of Empire, where he opens a hatch and is... As the station is falling, Ezra can't reach Kanan. And gosh, what does Kanan say? He says,
"I've got you." I think.
Yeah, he just says, "Let go." Right. I got you.
This is the ultimate trust fall. If you ever did a trust fall at summer camp, this is the you're going down toward the ground at 1,000 miles an hour, force power.
And I mean, both of them have magic powers, but still.
But they don't. It doesn't seem like they use the Force. Ezra lets go and is kind of free falling, and Kanan, because he's blind, his hand is in the wrong place. But I think he uses the Force to sense Ezra,
not to pull him towards him.
And then just all of a sudden reaches into the opposite direction and grabs him, and it's just so powerful in that moment of that is their relationship being repaired. Them making that connection literally is them reconnecting as master and apprentice.
Yeah. I think it's so well done. There's just so much about this. We're just at a point now where the writing and the way that the animation is living out that writing is just such high quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, gosh. There's so much in this episode. We get justice for the spiders, which is, I think, really important. Hondo. More Hondo. please, please, Hondo. And, like, that's just, yeah, those are, like, two other things that we haven't even scraped the surface of.
Before recording this, you know, she was very excited about Hondo. I was like, well, you get your boyfriend, I get mine in Thrawn. Yeah. So
I like it.
We can all geek out about our favorites.
Polyamory and fandom, it's a thing. To me, it was also kind of great because I've now convinced my partner Mary, as we're getting excited for the Kenobi show, she's watching the Clone Wars with me. We're watching Abridged. We're skipping a lot of the filler episodes, although she did like the Zillow Beast. We just watched that before I started recording. But we watched the first... I know. I think it's a good episode. But we watched the first time that Hondo and Naka shows up, and it made me realize that Hondo... And this happens a lot in TV shows, I think. Hondo is one of those characters where it took a little while for the writers to figure him out, you know? He starts out as, like, he's a little quirky and fun, but he's really also just kind of generic pirate man. And he, like, you know, refers to the Obi-Wan as, like, you Jedi scum. And, like, it's just, like, this isn't the Hondo I know yet. And so I got really excited. It's like, oh, my God, Mary's going to see him. Mary's going to fall in love with Hondo. Nope. Actually, wait, nope. This isn't Hondo yet. And I was very glad I didn't do the, like, oh, my God, you're going to love this character so much.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think it takes, like, 3 or 4 episodes before Hondo really becomes Hondo. But... now we're in Rebels, we are in Peak Hondo. It is like every moment he's trying to like, oh, but I could have a ship. I could have a ship. Remember, you could give me a ship. And just constantly changing the goalposts of what he was supposed to do for them. I just love him so much.
Yeah, I love his little like Ugnaught band of brothers that he ends up collecting. So the reason Turba is there in the first place, like Hondo got his information from Turba about this junkyard that's scrapping Y-wings. Turba used to work there. He's in prison because he tried to escape. So there's a bunch of Ugnaughts that work there. And Hondo just, like, chats with them in, like, Ugnies. And then, like, they end up all kind of, like, going off with Hondo. There's, like, a beautiful Hondo moment where he tells Ezra, like, I'm going to guard the shuttle so that, you know, if things get dicey, we can make a quick escape. Which, like... he does. Things get dicey, and Hondo and the Ugnaughts make a quick escape, right? And it reminds me of this, like, super old video game, Riven. I don't know if either of you played.
I've heard of it. I've never played it.
In the late 90s. Yeah, where, okay, spoiler alert for a, like, 30-year-old video game here. But at the end, so the main dude tells you, like, oh, please go find my wife. And then, like... I'll make this bridge, but I can't leave it open. So when you find her, you have to signal me by destroying the world, but don't worry, I'll come back and I'll take us to safety. So you solve a bunch of puzzles, find the wife, start destroying the world to alert the husband to come back. And he shows up and, like, grabs his wife and he's like, yeah, I'm taking us back to safety. Peace! Like, you're sent off into the void. Right? So I just love this, like, creative use of the word us here, right? Like, Ezra calls Hondo out, like, I thought you said you were waiting. He's like, yeah, no, I did. We're off now. Bye.
And going back to the Ezra's increasing darkness, when they first come across the band of Ugnaught mechanics on the station, Ezra is like, get out of my way.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think he might even say, like, or I'll kill you or something like that. Something very violent. And then it takes Hondo to go, whoa, 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 wait a minute, and start talking in Ugnaughtese, which is also weird because it's basically like pig snorts, except he's like, quack, 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 Turba. And you would think Turba would have a name in their native language.
Yeah.
But that's just an aside.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a thing. I have to say also, and it was a small moment, but like, so Turba runs ahead and you're like, oh, he's going to die. And this is one of those moments where it's like, I'm not sure yet if the episode is darkness and Sithness where people actually die, or if it's Hondo and Naka where everything is kind of comedic. And so right where Turba is, like a laser beam from one of the walkers hits the ground. There's a big explosion. And I'm like, oh, he's dead. But then you see him like flying up into the air out of the explosion with that kind. He's kind of like screaming in that way where it's kind of like a comedic, like, oh no, the explosion's going to make him, like, fly through the air and land in a funny way. But he's not. He's just dead.
No, he's dead.
And I was like, you kind of didn't decide what you're doing until the last moment with that shot.
And, like, even Hondo has, like, a funny line about it, because like Turba is asking for a greater cut of the profits, and I think Honda's like, no, that's not the deal. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get that cut. And then Turba dies, and Honda's like, well, now you're really not going to get the cut.
Yeah.
Classic.
It's kind of great. It's kind of great.
It's good.
All right. I think that's about all I had for this episode. Is there any or for these pair of episodes, any other last things you two wanted to bring up?
We're not going to talk about the Bendu?
Briefly alluded to it, but let's talk about the Bendu. Voiced by Tom Baker, who I've heard his voice before. I think he's a voice actor of some renown. He's fantastic in this role.
Yeah, the Bendu, like a giant moose man thing?
He looks like something out of World of Warcraft.
Mm, totally.
Tom Baker was the fourth Doctor, for you who are Doctor Who fans. That's how a lot of people may recognize his voice.
I want to address, you know, what he is or who he is, because we call this character the Bendu and not Bendu as like his name. And so I just want to read this quote when he first meets Kanan, and Kanan's like talking about Sith and Jedi. The Bendu says, "Jedi and Sith wield the Ashla and Bogan, the light and the dark. I'm the one in the middle. The Bendu." And it's very mysterious.
Right.
And it just like fits his character of like, what the heck are you?
And I think, weren't those terms, the Ashla and the Bogan, weren't those used in the mother, the father, sister, brother episodes of Clone Wars?
Oh, maybe. I know it was used by the Ashla and Bogan were used by like the mysterious witchy Lasat woman, and in that like warrior.
That's where we know it from.
But yeah, like just it seems like other names for the Force, which we've kind of known about and talked about with like the Night Sisters using something that is clearly the Force, but not the Force.
Right. And it's something that I really appreciate, because we've talked about this before, but the idea that like the Jedi have the monopoly on that side of the Force, and the Sith have the monopoly on their side of the Force. And so we started to see with the Night Sisters and Ventress in Clone Wars that you could have dark side users who weren't Sith. And we're starting to see kind of like with Ahsoka kind of doing her own thing, but not being a Jedi. And yeah, I think this is such an interesting character. It's a really interesting way of exploring this idea of like, maybe you don't have to be as the absolute ideals of either the Jedi or the Sith, that there can be some balance and some middle ground.
Yeah, he gives me like vague, like those giant turtles from Avatar vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just because, you know, I'm using like masculine pronouns for him, because that's what Kanan does. Like he's just large, he's in the forest, he kind of talks mysteriously about this ancient power that has been bestowed upon people.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is maybe where I'm drawing the connection.
Yeah, I think it's fair, because I think especially because the turtles are like, I think the part of the idea of the Bendu is he's not coming to Kanan to say, oh, you're fighting the Sith, this is terrible. He's like, Jedi Sith, you're gonna have your little wars. I'm kind of beyond that.
Yeah, like he summons Kanan because he's like, your belly aching is giving me a headache. Like, I can hear you being in conflict with yourself. You stop that right now. This used to be a peaceful place for me. You're out here moping about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he teaches Kanan how to reconnect with the Force and use the Force to, I guess, replace his sight. He can't see as he used to see, but he can use the Force to feel more around him, including the spiders, and actually connects with the spiders in a way that they are no longer aggressive towards him. And he begins to understand that the spiders are actually sensing his own fear.
Yeah.
And that's kind of projecting back on him.
And I think one reason why I like that scene so much, if you've heard me talk about in other podcasts, you know that kind of one of my, you know, issues with a lot of these kind of media is when a character becomes disabled in some way, but then magic or science or technology basically fixes their disability to the point where it doesn't really matter. You know, I love Daredevil as a character. Most of the folks who I know who are kind of advocates for blind people or blind themselves will be the first to say, like, he's not representation of a blind person, where Toph definitely is in a very different kind of a way. I don't love that they basically have him back to almost fully sighted this quickly. although it is a really nice moment that he still isn't completely there and that his, like, not seeing Ezra during that fall. But I thought, at least if you're going to do that, this really was a way to earn it. Because it really was about not just like, oh, look, you basically can see again, but you can have this completely different way of perceiving the world. And so I was like, okay, clearly we're not going to have just a character just be like a disabled character. I would love it if we did, but we're not there yet. But if not, this is a fairly good way to deal with that.
Yeah, there was like a few moments that kind of bugged me with like the Bendu basically telling Kanan, like, just try harder to not be blind, mm-hmm. which is like not the least dicky of moves. But I do get that, like, we've got the sort of pre-established Kanan can use the Force out. It's not like you were saying, like, science or magic just magically takes his disability away.
Right.
Yeah, I think the characters you bring up are very interesting because Daredevil just uses echolocation to effectively see, right? Like, right. He can, quote-unquote, see objects in front of him via the echolocation. Toph can use earthbending to feel stuff that's on the ground, but can't see stuff, like, floating in the air, or, like, if a character is holding up, how many fingers am I holding up? She can't sense that with her earthbending. And then Kanan can use the Force, but it also is going to have its limitations.
Right. Yeah, it's a really nice way of doing it. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Yeah, and I like that Kanan keeps his, like, Geordi-esque visor on as sort of mm-hmm. this, like, a reminder. Yeah. We've got, like, a visual reminder.
All right, well, I realize there's also one quick thing I want to mention in a spoiler section, but I think is now a good time to kind of wrap up the main part of the episode. Any last things about the Bendu we want to say?
So there probably was more we could talk about Thrawn, but I think we can leave it because he's going to be a recurring character mm-hmm. in this season. I do want to mention that at the end, they say that the Y-Wings are going to be sent to General Dodonna. That is the character who is in charge of Yavin Base. So we get, again, that connection to the larger rebellion leading towards A New Hope.
Yeah. Cause, and Y-Wings are part of that attack on the Death Star in New
Hope.
These
are the Y-Wings mm-hmm. that are part of that.
This is Gold Squad. It becomes Gold Squadron. Yeah. So,
I also wanted to talk about Rex and his weird, like, Clone Wars PTSD.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Rex has issues. Rex has so many issues. He still calls, like, any droid a clanker. And anytime he sees an even kind of aggressive droid, he, like, rushes in there to, like, tear mm-hmm. them limb from limb.
Well, when they first get to the station, there is a droid flying around that attacks the ship, and then Rex just, like, opens the back door and jumps out and fights it, tries to fight it, and almost, like, flies away into the atmosphere until I think Zeb catches him. So very reckless.
The show, it's Rexless. In the show, kind of, like, finding ways to build the relationship that goes against everything. The fact that Rex spends time with Chopper in this episode, like, the two of them have to work together and you're seeing them kind of building a connection. And granted, back in the day, Rex would have known, like, astromech droids were on his side all the time. But still, just seeing him and Chopper together as you see him, his feelings about all other droids is pretty awesome.
Yeah, totally.
All right, well, folks, there's so much more we could say. We're going to do a quick spoiler section at the very end. But for everybody, if you haven't seen the show before, and you haven't seen the rest of the show yet, and you want to step out now, this is a good time. Like I said, check out manscaped.com. You get 20% off by using the promo code SWUP. And of course, if you go to theethicalpanda.com, there you'll find all the other podcasts I'm doing. Great stuff happening on superhero ethics. I've done some episodes recently of the Totally 80s movie podcast, where I just recorded on one of my favorite AI movies, War Games. Great, great movie from the 80s with Matthew Broderick and Ali Sheedy. Check all that out. And of course, on theethicalpanda.com, you'll also find all the information about how to contact us. Would love your feedback. What do you think about where Ezra's going? Or do you think, he's just getting better at warfare? Everyone should get off his back. Do you think he's becoming a Sith and he should stop immediately? What do you think of the Bendu? What do you think of Thrawn? Let us know. Theethicalpanda.com. So thank you all so much for tuning in. If you want to hear the spoilers, stick around for a few minutes. For everyone else, thank you so much. And I'll give you a spoiler in 3, 2, 1. when Callus makes that small point about the civilian deaths, now I could go, oh, look, that's his doubts. You know, to me, it wasn't just a comment on Thrawn. I took it as this is Callus starting to realize just how callous the Empire is.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess. I thought it was just him needling Thrawn, kind of. Like, how can you consider this a success? But yeah, that makes sense. He's, like, starting to doubt the Empire as a unit. Yeah, like, because he's not Fulcrum yet, right? We're still a ways to go before he's the new Fulcrum?
Well, we don't know when he starts doing that.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think my interpretation is this is he is still having doubts, but this is one more. I interpreted it as this is one more thing. The fact that like the Empire calls him a hero, having done that, is one more of his like maybe I'm on the wrong side here. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think he's already a spy.
Neat.
And it mirrors his own history with Lasat.
Mm. Oh yeah,
you know, very that much we so. Saw him resolve with Zeb that. You know, that he basically is like, that wasn't how we wanted it to go. So I think him needling Thrawn on that same note of civilian casualties is, yeah, a self-realization of, like, I did those things.
Yeah,
definitely. And it was wrong. And he doesn't say to his Thrawn's face that this is wrong, but definitely implies it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's one of the things I think I'm going to be the most interested in watching as we go back through it, is I just want to see Callus's, like, because I remember thinking it came out of nowhere the first time I watched it, that Callus was Fulcrum. And now, even just watching in season two, I was like, okay, I start to see the hints. And now I think we're going to see a lot more of them.
Interesting. I didn't think it came out of nowhere because I thought that episode in season two with him and Zeb. I mean, I guess I just started shipping them from that point. And I'm like, they're in love. Obviously,
that's fair.
Callus has to come to the good side. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, it isn't something that I've been watching for, but it will be something to watch for now on this second watch through.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, folks. This is great. To our fans who stuck around, let us know what you think. And to everybody, have a great day.
No, write me Hound of Epic. That's another thing. email.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.